And on the phone with us now from Park City Film, it's director Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. I hope everyone's enjoying the holiday week. We have a diverse selection of films programmed to appeal to film lovers of all ages. And we're kicking it all off with our Winter Break Matinee film series, which we present with Park City Library. And that'll be this afternoon. We have A Christmas Carol, the classic story, of course, by Charles Dickens about Ebenezer Scrooge and his journey of self-redemption. This is the 2019 animated version of the film starring Jim Carrey. And then Friday afternoon, we'll have Free Solo, which is the winner of the 2019 Academy Award for Best Documentary, about Alex Honnold's quest to become the first person to scale the 3,000-foot El Capitan in Yosemite National Park without a rope. Both films will be shown at 4 p.m., that's today and tomorrow, and admission and popcorn are free. And then our weekend feature film is Parasite, which by all counts is a lead contender to win the Academy Award for Best International Film, which is a new name for the foreign film category this year, and is really just a masterpiece of a film. This is a story about the Park family, the picture of aspirational wealth, and the Kim family of rich and street smarts, but not much else. Be it chance or fate, these two houses are brought together, and soon a symbiotic relationship forms between the two families. The Kims provide indispensable luxury services, while the Parks obliviously bankroll their entire household. When a parasitic interloper threatens the Kims' newfound comfort, a savage, underhanded battle for dominance breaks out, threatening to destroy the fragile ecosystem between the Kims and the Parks. By turns darkly hilarious and heart-wrenching, Parasite showcases a modern master at the top of his game. Parasite won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival and has been shortlisted for an Academy Award for Best International Feature Film. We'll have wine and beer available for purchase on Saturday and Sunday nights, because it was 21 and older, of course. Parasite is rated R. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday at 8, and then again Sunday at 6. And then Monday evening, we're partnering with the Women's Giving Fund as part of our Real Community series to present Ethel, a documentary about the remarkable life of Ethel Kennedy. The film is a personal portrait of Ethel's political awakening, the life she shared with Robert F. Kennedy, and the years following his death when she raised their 11 children on her own. Intimate, funny, and deeply moving, Ethel offers a rare look inside a political dynasty, strengthened by family bonds, a compassion for others, and a wisdom forged from both hardship and triumph. We'll have director Rory Kennedy, Ethel's daughter, joining us after the film for a Q&A, and showtime will be at 7 p.m., and admission is free. You can check out trailers for all of these films and get more details on our Winter Break film series, which will continue next week, at parkcityfilm.org. And then grab your friends, family, and favorite popcorn bowl and come join us in the fancy auditorium inside the Park City Library building. Happy holidays, Park City.
Thanks, Katie. Well, stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Park City Acting Manager Matt Dias and Mayor Andy Bierman, taking a look back at 2019 as well as a look ahead to the city's priorities for 2020. Midway City Council-elect member Steve Doherty will be talking with, as well as Yuri Jensen. She's chair of the Wasatch County Latino Coalition. She has a look at some of the results from a survey that was conducted of the Latino community in Wasatch County this past summer. Good morning. Well, with 2019 coming to an end, Park City Mayor Andy Bierman and City Manager Matt Dias joining me now to reflect on the issues and accomplishments from this year and look ahead to 2020. Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Let's see. The Park City Vision 2020 process kicked off this year. Andy, I mean, what have we learned from it so far? And I guess, what do we expect to hear when all is said and done?
Well, we had great participation thus far. It's been nice to see so many community members come out and partake in the visioning, and a lot of strong opinions. To no one's surprise, there's a lot of concerns about growth and the traffic challenges that come with that, some of our housing challenges, then climate change. So many of the things that we have established as our community critical priorities resurfaced as still large priorities. What we heard from the community, though, is they want us to be bold and aggressive and proactive and take a hard look at those and take action faster.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about that, but council, I guess, is going to be receiving its final report before the retreat in February. Then what? And once you see the final report?
So we're going to actually bring that final report to the community first, and we're going to sort of suss that out and have a great summit with the community at the Santee Auditorium. In years past, we've also had a State of the City, and I think we're going to try to do those right around the same time, right around the same weekend. And the intent of sussing that out with the community is to then bring that into City Council's visioning process, which we'll do an annual retreat when we sort of set our goals and projectives for the next year. So it's to meet with the community, suss that out with council, and then turn right into an annual retreat where then we can start aligning programs and budgets and priorities.
Yeah, have you set a date then for the summit?
Off the top of my head, it escapes me. I believe it's February 12th and 13th. Does that sound right?
That sounds about right. It's mid-February.
Okay. Yeah. And then we've got the joint transit visioning happening the week before that.
That's right. And so I think the goal is we want all of this community feedback input to be instructive. We want it to inform the steps, the goals, the visions, the objectives, and the priorities that then will be staff's obligation to go try to work out and implement council's vision.
Yeah. So is that joint transit summit, is that something that you want the public to come to? Or is this just kind of more of on a one-on-one with the county council?
Well, certainly anytime we have a public hearing like that, we'd love it if the public shows up and participates and listens. I do think it's going to be more of a work session, though, in terms of the councils are getting together, and the JTAP representatives have worked on shared goals for transit ahead of time, and we're both going to be rolling that out to our individual councils ahead of time, and then that's going to be the first time we all sit down as a group and see if we can align on those shared goals, and then we're going to get into the mechanics of how to achieve those. So I think it will be, it'll be the first of probably several meetings of that sort, and there will be a lot of back and forth to make sure that we're in alignment and then start talking about tools.
Yeah. Do you share Councilmember Tim Henney's sentiment that Summit County may not be the partner you want?
No, we've got a bit of a sibling rivalry going with the county. It's something that flares up and down over time. They have a hard job, and I have a lot of respect for every one of them. I think there are some differences in our goals, both community-wide and transit-specific, and what you're seeing right now is a little bit of friction over those differences. Both sides know they need to work together to be effective. We have to be good partners. But how we achieve that, I think there's going to be some heated moments, and there's going to be some disagreements, and I think Tim's just warming up for the fact that we're going to have some hard work ahead, but I'm confident we'll get there.
The vision process, as you noted, has pointed to bold changes, the path forward for Park City. What do you think the boldest change the council has made this year?
Matt, you want to take first whack at that?
To me, I think the boldest change is that we've really gotten in the game with building affordable housing. So the city has actually a long history of working with the private sector through the development review process to bring about deed-restricted affordable housing. But this council and mayor, and the previous council mayor in particular, really got in the game. And so there was a $40 million allocation, and we've had, I believe this is our third development come online in terms of affordable housing. So these last two groups, this council and the previous one, are the first two councils that have gotten in the game and put taxpayer dollars directly into the affordable housing program, you know, put men and women and children into deed-restricted housing in our community so they can be part of our community, go to the schools, be in our recreation programs, and be residents of Summit County. So to me, that is the boldest expression of this council's commitment to the affordable housing program and policies and procedures and crisis that we've been experiencing as a community.
Andy, I mean, would you say the council's bold change was severing the ties with Diane Foster and giving him the job, Matt the job?
Well, I think internally, certainly we've made some significant staff changes to tool up for where we want to go, changing the leadership position is a huge change in the organization. Fortunately for us, the departure or separation with Diane was fairly amicable, and we had, 6.5, 7 years to watch Matt in his role, and we felt really comfortable shifting him into the manager's role. So it was bold, yes, and that it was a significant change, but we were fairly confident it was the right change and it was the right time.
Yeah. So looking ahead, Matt, what does bold change look like to you moving forward?
Well, I think it's going to be twofold, quite frankly. I think at its most basic sort of fundamental level, we are going to have to re-envision and reevaluate the way we're spending our money on infrastructure. We have, by and large, focused on roads and streets and sidewalks in the past, and we've had a long history of doing that, and we've done it tremendously well, building plazas and other types of infrastructure. But I think you're going to see us perhaps spend our money differently. We're not going to be investing in parking lots and parking garages. We're going to be investing in transit-first methodologies, technologies, things like microtransit, maybe aerial transit connections. So we're really going to have to rethink the way that we're spending taxpayer money, and how it will impact on a day-to-day basis residents and businesses and tourists. But looking forward at a higher level, I think this next sort of wave of being bold is going to be really embracing and working with our stakeholders and our partners. And it's not to say that we don't have decades-long history of working with communities on the Wasatch Back, but I think the next frontier, given the growth around us, you're really going to see us double down as staff on behalf of the mayor and council, working with Wasatch County, Midway, Heber, Mountain Land Association of Governments, the school district. I really think that's sort of phase two, is we're going to have to dig in here for this next decade.
Yeah, and we've kind of mentioned now transportation and affordable housing as bold changes moving forward. Andy, I mean, what does that look like then for social equity and the energy priority? The bold change.
Okay. I'll tackle those in order. Social equity, we're really at the beginning of this effort. We just got our strategic plan, and I think it really dictates the work we need to do, and part of that is housing, part of that is inclusion. There's some requests there to work on wage. Some of the things I think we're making some immediate progress on is we've put together that Aging Alliance, which is a task force to work on senior needs. And I was really pleased to see in the school's master plan, they included a potential multi-generational center on the Kearns campus, which I think could be a huge amenity for this community, bringing together many of the different services we need to help meet our equity goals. But that's going to evolve. And even things like transit, as we're looking at our surveys on that. About two-thirds of our transit riders, our workforce that ride on our transit, don't have other vehicles. So you look at something like that, when the availability of a fare free system and the expansion of routes really makes a lot of difference for our workforce. So you're going to see us dig in and figure out the things we're already doing right and how to expand on those, and we're going to continue to look for areas of weakness. But the equity one, probably more than anything else we do, is a community issue. So it's something we're going to have to partner with our nonprofits in town and see how we can fortify each other. Do you want me to address energy still?
Sure.
Energy, I think, was actually a huge year for us in terms of we were able to pass the Community Renewables Act, HB 411, in the legislature, and we thought this was a great thing. We are extremely happy about it now, having seen 23 different communities across Utah have signed on to be 100% clean renewable energy by 2030. We were just blown away by the level of interest. I think that represents about 40% of Utah's total power use wants to switch over to renewables. So I suspect Rocky Mountain Power is really scrambling right now to get ready to tool up for these utilities. And then we also hosted Mountain Towns 2030. We brought communities from all over the Rocky Mountains here to talk about how we can collaborate and share good ideas and build collective courage to address climate change. And I feel like we have tremendous momentum in that area right now.
Moving on, last week's budget adjustment on the council's agenda noted that we will be hiring two deputy city managers rather than an assistant city manager and a community development director, Matt. So what does that accomplish?
Well, my hope is that it really helps us with getting to the implementation phase of what I would call the last decade of planning, creating priorities, aligning critical priorities. And we recently had our community development director move on to a different community, so we had an opportunity to step back and reflect. My goal is to have two deputy city administrators or city managers, and have one sort of focusing on the external aspects of our organization. And I've alluded to some of them about partnerships, negotiating with outside entities. They will focus on the community development sort of quadrant of our organization. And then I've said before that, I do have an affinity for sort of back to basics and the fundamentals and sound financial management. And so my intent is to have the other deputy focus on internal affairs or sort of the internal administration of the city, payroll and purchasing and contracts, financial management. And so by having these two dual roles, I hope it just creates a more efficient, a more effective organization where we can really focus on implementation of city council's priorities.
So what tasks are you saving for yourself?
Well, I'll continue to retain the legislative affairs for the city. The mayor and I and several council members work really closely on that, and we've had a tremendous amount of success over the last, 6.5 years. I'll also continue to help with the Park City Leadership Program. And then day to day, I will be heavily involved in all sorts of affairs for the city and working on this new wave of partnerships.
Yeah. So, I mean, leadership Park City, I mean, that's kind of a seems like a junior city manager kind of thing to do. I mean, why, as our new city manager, would you maintain that?
Well, I think for now, my goal is to retain that. And believe it or not, I have reflected on that, and I've obviously worked with Miles Radiman for, I think it's my fourth year now. And there is an amazing aspect of that program that really connects individuals, whether it's staff, whether it's elected officials, to members in our community, whether it's a realtor, a doctor, a ski instructor, a ski patrolman. And I want to make sure that I retain that connectivity. I want to make sure that on a day-to-day basis, I am interacting with the public and I am part of a program where I receive unfettered feedback, good, bad, or indifferent. The leadership program is a wonderful learning and growing experience and has kept me humble all along and kept me really, really connected to people in our school district, people in our recreation district, all sorts of members of the Wasatch back, whether you're in Midway, Heber, Park City, Summit County. And so for the time being, I see it as an essential component. I don't know if I'll be able to do it forever, but we are trying to keep Miles around forever. And, you know, I myself and Minda Stockdale provide a lot of support for the program. There's obviously a large legislative aspect of the program. We spent a lot of time down the legislature, and so there's a lot of synergy there.
Yeah, it just sounds like the other two deputies now are kind of doing some of the heavy lifting.
Well, we used to have a community development director, and so there will be no net add to the payroll. So basically, I'm just taking I'm taking the community development director position, just kind of reassigning the duties and tasks that were associated with that position. There's no net cost or no net increase to the taxpayer.
Okay, when do you hope to hire him?
I actually hope to get job postings out the first week of the new year. And so I'm just really encouraging anyone and everyone internally within the organization or externally outside in the community or otherwise to apply if they're interested.
And how will you consider social equity when hiring for those positions?
Well, it will be a consideration in the internal affairs job position. We have a preferred skill, which is a bilingual skill. It's obviously not a prerequisite or requirement, but we do hope that having some additional bilingual skills in our organization would be a benefit. And then secondarily, what we didn't cover is in that budget amendment from 2 weeks ago, as I had some additional project management resources included in that budget amendment. And so that's another bucket that we will be able to utilize to further our social equity goals. And so we are, you know, talking with some people on the Wasatch front and others and working with the Community Foundation about what this next wave of our social equity goals will be and who's best to execute that. I don't suggest that it needs to be a city employee because it really is a community initiative.
Back to the legislature. The legislature, of course, passing its tax overhaul during a recent special session, heading into the 2020 general session in just about a month now. What are you keeping tabs on?
Well, that's kind of the golden question, and I hold my breath every year because the way the legislative session is for the benefit of our listeners and is really is this hurry up and wait process where we have a 45-day session once a year where there's probably over 1,200 different bill files that are filed. But in particular, we are concerned that, you know, there could be some poaching or people going after our energy initiatives because they have been so successful. So we have our eye on those. We obviously every year are now getting different sort of tax initiatives sent our way where people are interested in exploring additional ways to open up the TRT, the transient room tax, or local sales tax options, or transit sales tax options. And so really our posture is defensive. We are in a defensive posture at the legislature. We're constantly trying to protect the ground that we've gained or the ground that we have today. So we will have our eye on energy bills. We will have our eye on tax bills and the social equity. We are finding that the legislature is more and more inclined to have really progressive measures when it comes to non-discriminatory hiring practices and otherwise. And so we're eagerly hopeful that there'll be some additional bills this year.
Yeah. Do you expect anything from the second homeowners under that banner of social equity?
Not off the top of my head, but, you know, second homeowners are an incredibly important part of our community. I was just having a conversation the other day at the supermarket with a second homeowner that spends 4 or 5 months here, and they go to the Mark, and they go to the library, and they really do feel connected to this community. And we talked about some of the tax implications of being a second homeowner and what that means and the amenities that it brings to our community. But this was an individual that is drawn to this place from somewhere else and is willing to pay for it because of the sense of community, because of the amenities that we have, and it's somewhere that they cherish and that they love. And it's become part of their life and part of their family, and they hope to retire here. And so that was a rewarding, you know, little anecdote to hear over the holidays, that even with this tax structure that we have, that as locals we clearly benefit from, it is far and away worth it as an incentive for that individual to come here from Galveston, Texas.
Andy, what do you see as the number one biggest challenge, as well as opportunity, that you and the council facing in 2020?
I think delivering. We're switching from a mode of the past 5 years we've really been focused on visioning and interacting with the community and figuring out where we need to go. And I think that's crystallized pretty solid. And the visioning has confirmed that. There haven't been any radical changes from what we've been hearing over the last half decade. So really, at this point, we just want to start to deliver these projects. I think you look at the 8 Woodside One projects that are coming online next month, we've got 225 people looking to move into units that have applied for that. And so that just shows how desperate the demand is and how important it is we get Woodside 2 and the Homestake lot and look for other housing opportunities. Certainly, we are concerned about climate change and want to continue to push our climate action forward as quickly as possible, despite the great strides we've made. And I think we'll see in the next couple of days how our transit's working. I think despite great efforts and huge investments in the transit system, we continue to grow, and we're growing rapidly and succeeding as a resort economy, which just builds that pressure as quickly as we can address it. So you're going to see a lot of focus on how to refine that and some more aggressiveness. And those are all things that are very expensive projects. They're very critical projects to the community. And they're ones that this council needs to lock in and make sure that we have the staff and the resources and the public support in place that we can implement. So I see 2020 as the beginning of an implementation phase.
Okay. Guys, anything else you'd like to mention?
Yeah, if I could. Is that all right? I do want to thank all of the men and women at Park City Municipal Organization and in the community that are working over the holidays. You know, even last evening, you know, my phone was texting all night with different sort of snow plows and salting and sanding initiatives. And you're only as good as the people that you surround yourself with, and the men and women that are out there over the holidays not spending time with their family. We're very, very grateful for them. Of course, we love the snow, and there's nothing better than a white Christmas, but there's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention that. So thank you to them.
Okay.
And I'd just like to add a ditto to that and also include our service economy that keeps the whole town running. Certainly, they without them, we could not survive and thrive as we do. And I want to thank all of our residents for their patience as we come into the busy season ahead of time. Remember, we love where we live, and it's a small price to pay for the rest of the year where we get to live everyone else's vacation. So happy holidays to all.
Okay. Andy, Matt.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW News Time, 8:38. KPCW News Time now, 8:39. Midway City residents filled 3 election seats during November's municipal election. One incumbent retained her seat. 2 other people were newly elected to the council. One of those is Steve Doherty. He joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Steve. Your background, what you do, where you're from.
I'm an attorney, but before I went to law school, I was a ski instructor, and I still am. Work at Deer Valley, and I've been instructing probably for almost 50 years now, and practicing law for close to 40, down in Salt Lake. But I have a lot of clients in Park City. I lived in the Snyderville Basin for 20-some years and moved over to Midway to downsize, so to speak, and just fell in love with Midway.
Yes.
It's so nice to live in your county seat, or your city seat, the center. Great people over there and love it. And I'm kind of winding down my legal practice a little bit, still teaching though, and thought I could serve a little bit over in Midway. And I had some people talk with me that are in the city and in government and around. And so I thought I'd give it a whirl.
Okay. So what do you specialize in, your law practice?
Mostly transactional work, buying and selling stuff. I've represented landowners, developers, restaurants, lots of restaurants up here.
All right. So you say you have more time. That was one of the reasons you want to serve. Were there any particular issues that kind of drove you to run for council?
That was a big question during the campaign, and my answer is no. I didn't. There are issues. Certainly, I recognize all of those, but there wasn't any particular issue. I saw, and a lot of people saw, the need to have representation of the new people. And I've been over there for 10 years now, over 10 years, so I don't necessarily consider myself a new person. But I've got a little different perspective, bringing my legal career and experience to the table. There's some big issues. I've learned of big issues since I started to run, like the transmission line, the high voltage transmission line. I lived through the substation fight over here for some clients, and we're in the middle of that right now in Midway.
Yeah. Well, at the last meeting, the Midway City Council did vote to approve burying those lines through the city rather than putting them up overhead. I mean, how is that going to be paid for?
That's quite a complicated question. There is a statute in Utah that is very favorable to utility companies, and I can see some merit in it. To not let local governments dictate the provision of these necessary services to citizens and businesses. But in this situation, it generates a lot of problems. You don't know how much until you get further down the road. And it's really two different projects. There's Heber Light and Power's project that services the Heber Valley. And then there's Rocky Mountain Power's project that is just a transmission line that goes through the county, through Midway. And it's only about a mile in Midway, but it's right through a residential neighborhood.
So, I mean, was that something that you were in favor of, though, burying them?
Yes, if it's more complicated than we have time to dig into. The motion, I was there at the meeting. I'm not yet on the council, but I'm there at the meeting. I've talked with a lot of neighbors. One of the Kevin Payne, who got elected with me, lives right in that area. So he's intimately attuned to it. Plus he was on and still is on the planning commission, has been for several years. So he knows a lot more about it than I do. I'm learning about it. It's a real tough dilemma. You know, people don't like to pay for that stuff.
Yeah.
But they also don't want to have these huge metal towers in their backyards.
Yeah. Other certainly issues in Midway is figuring out how to retain that resort city sales tax. I mean, what does that look like to you in terms of, because we're talking about lots of money.
Yeah, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's a big part of the city budget. The real problem is, and the mayor has just been fantastic in chasing this down. Recently, there was an effort by the city to include a campground at the Wasatch State Park by the golf course that then added, and they get a bonus. Campgrounds, like RV slots, get a bonus on that resort tax. I'm going to try and find some place that I can get some glamping facilities in over there. You know, we're not looking for a bunch more of second homes, but we would like to keep that resort tax. I would like to make sure that Midway retains a resort flavor to it. It's agricultural history, a rural agricultural history, but it's become a resort. I mean, we got five wonderful 18-hole golf courses right there, either in or on the edge of the city. We've got access to Sundance just down the road, Deer Valley's just over the mountain. We've got, you know, the Provo River. I'm not a fly fisherman, but there are a lot of them over there all the time. You know, it's just a neat place to be. One of the big issues is preserving that.
Well, I was going to say, how do you preserve that rural character without kind of pricing out the people who live there?
The onslaught of big expensive homes is what is perhaps endangering that rural resort character, and that's a problem that is faced in Summit County and Park City and Heber, Wasatch County, all over the place. you build something really nice, everybody loves it, but you just have to make sure you don't love it to death. And so it brings traffic problems, school, you know, problems, walkability problems. These are all issues that need to be addressed in Midway. And we are. I mean, I think we've got a city council. Prior city councils have addressed these issues as well. So we're kind of looking to carry the ball forward, maybe a little bit more creativity.
And Midway city residents approved a $5 million bond that still hasn't been spent, though, right?
Open space. We're not going to spend that money willy-nilly. We have to qualify the properties, and we have to get the most bang for the buck. So the dollars that Midway is going to spend on open space, buying conservation easements, is going to get multiplied by finding other matching funds, federal, state, private. And so we're not going to just throw money at people. This is not a retirement for the folks who have lived there a long time.
Yeah. Finally, what does a successful term on the council look like for you?
4 years. Trying to move the ball forward and feeling good about that. You're never going to make everybody happy. I've represented people in all communities from down on the Arizona border all the way up to the Idaho border, all around. And how issues are resolved in small communities is not always the, you know, democratic way, if you could say that. If you didn't like the mayor in this one town, you cut off the chicken's head and threw it in their car. That happens. Hopefully not now. That was some time ago, but it can happen. And so, you know, we organize the citizens. The citizens over in Midway are great. They get organized. They know each other. And it's a lot of fun.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, I'm just looking forward to January 6th when we can get rocking and rolling. On the power line, they passed they granted the conditional use permit, 4.5 pages of conditions. It's not going to be easy to sort that out. So Kevin and I get to deal with that, along with the rest of the council, obviously. I know all the people on the council. They're great people. The people who were on the council, Ken Van Wagener and Bob Probst, fantastic guys. There were only four of us that ran for the three spots, so you wouldn't have an election if we hadn't, if somebody else hadn't thrown in the ring, their hat in the ring. So I love it. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, Steve, thanks for your time. That's Steve Doherty, newly elected Midway City Council member. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Joining me now in the studio, Yuri Jensen, the chairperson of the Wasatch Latino Coalition. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So before we start talking about some of the results of the survey that you did this summer, talk to us, just remind our listeners what the Wasatch Latino Coalition is and what your mission is.
Our mission is to connect families with resources and advocate for the greater impact through education, collaboration, and the engagement of the Latino community. We had the opportunity to work on the vision as well. We came out to having an empowered, integrated, and thriving community in which all contribute to the well-being and development on the Wasatch County.
So what sort of services do you provide?
Well, right now we have been supporting especially agencies, organizations, and institutions on providing resources, providing feedback and input on how they can serve better the Latino community. That's why we've been gathering every month, just to listen to things that the community needs and the community wants to be more successful, as well as these agencies. Like I mentioned, when they come, they might ask for help. And some of the things that came up last month was the Salvation Army, the Red Kettle campaign. They needed volunteers to ring the bells to get donations for Christmas. We have different religious groups approaching us, asking us if we can spread the word about the Christmas holidays. because they wanted to target more Latino families. So they've been doing posadas, which in South American countries, they can have up to 9 different Christmas holidays before the 24th. So they're very special. We have Operation Hope. As you know, this was their second year doing the Christian Center of Park City. They were doing the Christmas gifts to families. And many Latino volunteers and members from the Wasatch Latino Coalition were able to participate. We served this last Saturday over 750 kids. I don't have all the numbers, but it was just amazing. And just things like that, trainings that come up, people will come and ask us if we know who might be willing to teach these classes in Spanish or just spreading the word to their families. And as a coalition, we were able to buy a listen kit, an interpreting listen kit. So if we go out and we invite families, we make sure that the information is interpreted, translated into Spanish.
Yeah. So for like 2020, I mean, anything that you've got planned then for next year?
Well, we have a couple of things. In January 10, at the Heber Valley Elementary, we're going to do a clothing bank to serve everybody. But the word that we have it spreading out, it's for Latino families. Everybody is welcome. Then we have Love and Logic in Spanish parenting classes. They will be taught at the high school from 10 to noon, starting on January 6th, and they will end in February. There are 6 classes. And this last month, we started them, and we ended last week with over 23 parents. So great results. Many parents now taking the information how to become a better parent.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, your organization conducted a survey this past summer, mm-hmm. and you had a number of respondents. How many people did you talk to?
We talked to 75.
Okay. Yes. And that was adults and youth?
Yes, adults and youth.
All right. Some of the key things that jump out are community interest in higher education, physical, mental health, and avoiding drugs. Anything that stood out specifically for you, the coalition?
Those three that came up from us was that the needs for the youth were on depression, mental health. And then there was a similarity between adults and the youth on avoiding drugs, alcohol. The adults, I think what we can do to help them more is to make sure the resources are in English and keep providing English classes. Some of the needs, one of the biggest ones was education. So we want to make sure that everything we do as a coalition, it's just making sure that we are educating our community on all these different topics. I know that one of their first needs was to communicate, spend time with kids. And the same for the kids. The parent-child communication and relationships was very important. We were surprised that many people asked for assistance to access college, but not just for kids, but also for parents. Parents want to continue with their higher education. And like I mentioned, Spanish and bilingual resources, that's a big one.
You also looked at both the some of the statistics, the data from both the Wasatch County Sheriff's Department and the Heber City Police Department, and looking specifically at juvenile problems. What did things come out there?
Yeah, from the police department, they had 98 Latino juvenile offenses. And then for the sheriff department, there were 66. For both of those, people said that the highest was marijuana, tobacco, and drugs and alcohol. So, yeah, that came up. That's a concern, big concern. Our Wasatch Latino Coalition members.
Yeah. So what are you going to do with all of this information? You said you had a 117-page report?
Yeah, the SHARP data. That one actually is the student health and risk prevention data. We're going to have a presentation coming up in January 14 at noon at the Health Department Conference Room B. There's going to be 3 different coalitions. We're very, very concerned about this. It's the Caring Community Coalition, the Wasatch Wellness Coalition and the Latino Coalition, we will be gathering just to understand a little bit more about the needs. So the data that I have only for Hispanic, like you said, it was 117. And something that came up, it's that kids' concerns that came up, it's alcohol, marijuana, mental health, cigarettes and vaping products. We have discussed this at the Caring Community Coalition. All tobacco products, that's a big, big issue. Other things that we saw that were a concern was the relationship with their parents at home and how safe they feel in the schools and with their peers. So those five that I just mentioned, we hope that in the future we can, and next year exactly, we can work on it. I know the conference called Issues, it's going to happen in April. So hopefully we can work with the other agencies and presenters, keynote speakers, just to get information and make sure that we can translate it for the families that can join us that day.
Okay. You had on the agenda for your latest meeting that you would be setting goals for 2020. Were you able to do that?
Yes. So last week, we had the opportunity to review and compile all this data. Some of the things that came up on discussion was for the areas that we can be focused and be directed. There were suggestions of addressing mental health stigma, the parent-school communication, parent-child relationship, and bilingual and English resources. We also talk about the idea of creating more awareness on these issues to provide more direction to these resources in our Wasatch County.
Okay, so go
up. Yeah, there's still like a lot of planning process to work on. But.
Okay. Finally, I guess just how you say you meet monthly, when and where?
Yes. So we have been meeting at the Wasatch Health Department. The second, the third, or the fourth month of the week. It all depends what's going on because when we want to be present and everything that's going on. The next one will be on January 14th. It's the same day as the SHARP data presentation at the Health Department Conference Room B. And then our gathering will be on February 11th at noon. The same Health Department, except that the room, it's Room A. So you're welcome to join us. Anyone who would like to get to know the members and your input, your feedback, I can tell you it's very, very important to us.
Yeah, where is that kind of list of meetings that you post on? Do you just do it online? Do you have a Facebook page? Or
yeah, we have been posted those on Facebook at the Wasatch Latino Coalition, and I just sent an email to all our members, and I always ask them to make sure that they spread the word.
Okay, so I mean, is there a paid membership or anybody can be a member?
Anyone can be a member.
Okay, so
we have a member commitment. Okay. So when I have the opportunity to meet with them, I talk about some of the requirements.
Yeah, so if somebody wanted to be a member, they just need to email you?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, what's that email address?
So it's wasatchlatinocoalition@gmail.com.
Okay. Hey, Erie, anything else you wanted to tell us?
Oh, thank you. Happy holidays.
Okay.
And see you next year.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned now for Cool Science Radio right after headline news from National Public Radio. It's 9 o'clock.